Good day, and thank you all for joining again the quarterly All VR call. My name is Keitra Hill, and I will be the moderator for today's call. Before we begin, I'm going to get into the agenda, and then we're going to go into some logistics. So first, for our agenda, I'll be going through logistics, then we'll have some announcements, then we'll have some updates and reminders about pre-ETS. The next, we'll be providing information about the Payroll Information Exchange, PIE. And then we'll have a Q&A session specifically for that topic. And then next, we'll go over the top three payment denials for the second quarter of 2025. Then we'll have our final Q&A session, and then we'll talk about some upcoming events. Next slide, please. So here we have our logistics. This call is being recorded and transcribed. It will be a 60-minute call. Participants are not permitted to record the meeting nor capture the transcript. During the Q&A sessions, if you want to chat, we don't have chat available for today, so you will have to ask all questions aloud. If you're joining by phone and you wish to ask a question, raise your hand utilizing star 5, and you will be unmuted by the facilitator, and then you'll want to press star 6 to unmute yourself. If joining via ES Teams app, you'll click the raise hand icon, and facilitator will provide access to the audio to allow you then to unmute your microphone and ask your question. Next, for logistics, please ask only one question each time you are called upon by the facilitator. Additional questions or comments can be sent to the vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. Those questions not answered during this live event will be forwarded to the appropriate panelists for comment. For closed captioning, that is available for participants who are joining using the MS Teams application or a separate closed caption link that was provided in the invitation for today's call. To join the closed caption in Teams, you want to go to the More option at the top of the MS Teams window and click Language and Speech. Next, select Turn on Live Captions. If you're using a link provided in the invitation, you want to paste that link into your browser, and that will open in a separate window for you to view the live captions. So next, I'm going to go over a few announcements, and those announcements are regarding the Gov delivery messages. So just a few reminders. We've had three this past quarter. On May the 27th, a Gov delivery was sent out in regards to the VR post-employment reimbursement. On June 11th, we sent out the pre-employment transition services kickoff materials that are now available online. So instructions for submitting the pre-ETS claims were attached to that Gov delivery message. On June the 13th, we had the virtual cost reimbursement training, and those materials are online as well. So both the pre-ETS and the virtual VR cost reimbursement training presentations are available on the Your Ticket to Work website's events archive page under national calls and specific topics. So next, we'll have the pre-employment transition services updates and reminders provided by Shayda Roper. Shayda, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're at our full rollout for pre-ETS. Without further ado, so I know some of you are excited, and I appreciate the enthusiasm. We have run into a couple of snafus while we're there. However, we are at the full rollout point. And so effective June 2nd, SSA expanded their cost reimbursement policy to reimburse for pre-ETS youth 16 and 17. So focus on those ages because that's the age group we're targeting. And we are trying to reimburse you with cost reimbursement services based on that age group. They must receive Social Security disability insurance or supplemental security income. This is part of our disability program, so they cannot not be receiving benefits from Social Security. You have to have certain information. They should have received at some point in time SGA based on this service agreement leading to a VR claim. So it still has to be a voc rehab claim, but it has to lead to SGA and everything that we do under VR services, even though we're respecting the pre-ETS services. Those pre-ETS service should have led to a VR claim, and in addition to that, it should be based on substantial gainful activity. It's just like anything else. You also have to follow the provisions under VR and Social Security regulations, in addition to everything else that factors. Next slide, please. So we have on the screen, and we cannot at this time accept any other pre-ETS codes other than these service codes listed. So if it's youth codes by RSA or something else by RSA that you're doing, we can only accept these five codes for cost reimbursement. That is what we were approved for, to respect the idea of youth transition and following the laws of WIOA. So it has to be, if you're on a supplemental, you can do 37 or you could do 103, 97, 109, 115, and 121. We cannot use any other codes that you might give us that have to do with youth. This is it. This is what we're working with cost reimbursement. Maybe down the line somewhere, we might be able to do something else. But in the meantime, this is what we were approved for. So once you submit your claims, they have to follow these five service codes, whether you're using the SSA codes because you're typing it manually, or you're using RSA codes because you did it through Ticket Tracker or however you're doing it. So it can only be these five codes. Next slide, please. So in addition with the codes, this is an audit. So we are auditing your claims. So therefore, you have to submit documentation. You have to use it under other. So therefore, when you're putting this in the portal, it goes under other. We need the signed service agreement plan, IEP or 504. It's been addressed that some of you don't have all the documentation, or it's different documentation. Please send us all this documentation, because we're doing it as we're auditing your pre-ETS costs. We're auditing that. We need a signed IEP, because somehow they were able to transition to a VR program because of those pre-ETS services. So we need a signed IEP or an amended IEP. We will have to have the SSA 199 listing the itemized costs for pre-ETS. So once again, this is an audit. Finally, we need the authorization and proof for payment for those pre-ETS costs. So we're not asking for every cost that you are applying for or requesting for VR when it's initial claim. We're literally asking for the pre-ETS portion, because now we're saying pre-ETS was involved in this. The pre-ETS got them to the VR program. So we don't want you to get overwhelmed and think, oh my gosh, I have to submit everything as an audit just for those pre-ETS services. If it becomes a PVR later, then that's a whole nother animal. But while we're processing the pre-ETS portion, we do expect that you send this in with your pre-ETS claim. If for whatever reason you did not submit all the documentation and information, we are treating this as though it is a PVR and giving you 75 days to submit the information. However, we would like this on the front end, not to hold up your claims and not to flood our systems so that we have a whole bunch of pending claims that are supposed to be pre-ETS. We're fine combing these claims. We're going through them with the warrants. We're looking at the service information. We're looking at that 199 to make sure that you did those pre-ETS services, the five that we're requesting, and the cost that you requested. VR agencies should do their due diligence to have this documentation, whether it's an initial claim or a supplemental claim, at the time that they're requesting reimbursement with pre-ETS service involvement. Next slide. So, for the claim submission instructions, one, make sure the remarks, when it pops up to us, that it says pre-ETS in the remarks. You should also put along with that the service agreement date. If you don't, that's fine because we would have the documentation. So that's fine, but it should remark pre-ETS so we know there's pre-ETS involvement, whether it's initial, reconsideration, or a supplemental. We know that we're looking for these five codes. Have all the documentation ready to submit with your claim, and do not do several fax cover sheets for this. We're using other, so therefore put it in with that other fax cover sheet so that we can get all these pre-ETS services. We are working on systems release so that pre-ETS can have its own fax cover sheet, can have its own radio button. We are working on several systems release to respect and anticipate that now we have pre-ETS. For all claims, enter the service date on the remarks tab only. That's it. You don't have to do everything else. On the remarks tab, please enter the service agreement date along with pre-ETS so that we know, okay, this is a pre-ETS claim and it needs to get to a certain work group, and the work group will verify all documentation and decide. If anything, you'll get an email from us saying, hey, we don't have all the information. Please provide all the information. Next slide, please. So for initial claims, enter pre-ETS costs first. So your costs are supposed to be in order anyway. But since this is the beginning, even prior to the VR program, you would enter your pre-ETS costs first that you're requesting. For supplement, and by the way, with initial claims, and I've gotten this, so let me clarify this. In addition to the pre-ETS costs first being submitted, when you're submitting that claim, we do expect that you follow everything that you would have done in an initial claim where the pop-up shows us the Verser or the earnings in addition to saying pre-ETS involvement and that service date. So it is still an initial claim. We just now have pre-ETS involvement. For supplemental claims, all you have to do is enter the pre-ETS cost because you're verifying to us that, hey, I need to be reimbursed for costs that were missed prior because I submitted an initial claim that had pre-ETS costs in it, and I was not reimbursed for my pre-ETS services that led to the opening of a VR claim. Okay? And most importantly, we're only going back to May 2023 for those supplemental claims. So therefore, we started this pilot or phased rollout, I should call it, in May of 24. So you can only go back from supplemental claims 1 year, and we're taking it back to May 2023. If you have any further questions, you can always email the help desk. If you need any clarification or any training, you can always email the help desk. They'll get it to me, and you can email me personally. But we do have a team of people working on all this pre-ETS, Candace and Katie. They're working on all the systems issues. So therefore, we will, like, we're putting this first. Renee has made it clear this is first. So any questions, please send them to the help desk. Or if you need any one-on-one, personally send them to me. I hope this helped a little bit for those of you who are a little bit reluctant or scared to submit your pre-ETS claims. We want to be able to reimburse you for these pre-ETS costs. It's important to us. So we're not trying to, you know, evade it or anything. We're working on it pretty much all the time. That's it. If that's it for the next slide, Petra.
That is it. Thank you so much, Shada. I appreciate that information. Next, we will go into the payroll information exchange implementation, which will be shared by Christine Irwin-Tribbett. Christine, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I just want to apologize before starting here. I am suffering with a really bad cough, and so I might go on mute to avoid coughing in your ear. So I'm here to talk about the Payroll Information Exchange, or PIE, the implementation of it. I want to provide some background on PIE, discuss the PIE authorization form, and then I also want to let you know when the beneficiary should report wages and also provide some reminders on what should continue to be reported even though we have a PIE authorization on file. And then I want to just go over a few things you can do to help us out. Next slide. So PIE came about from Section 824 of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. And what it really did is give us the authorization for us to enter into an information exchange with a third-party payroll data provider. As long as we are obtaining wage and employment information for the purposes of improving program administration and preventing improper payments, we can enter into a third-party payroll agreement to receive wage information for Social Security disability insurance benefits and supplemental security income. We contracted with Equifax to receive the wage and employment information for both SSDI and SSI beneficiaries, and also for SSI deemers. And if you're not familiar with that term, that refers to a person whose income and resources are considered when determining another individual's eligibility for benefits. Typically, a deemer is a spouse or a parent or some other household member whose financial situation can affect the monthly benefit for the primary beneficiary. We will receive wage and employment information on a monthly basis, and only for the month prior. So actually right now we're receiving the June wages through the PIE exchange. We did our first exchange in April with approximately 1 million SSN. So we've been doing sort of a slow rollout. We are expanding the number of SSNs we send over to Equifax each month, and we're hoping to be at full implementation next month. A couple questions I often get when I give this presentation is, will PIE contain self-employment data or 1099 data? It will not. So any self-employment data will still need to be reported. Generally, what I tell folks is anything you can get or acquire through the work number, if you use that service, we will get that same information through the PIE data. Okay, let's talk about the PIE authorization. Next slide. So we used the form SSA 8240 to obtain authorization to receive the wage data and employment information. We can collect the authorization form from applicants or beneficiaries. If the person files for disability, the authorization is built into our disability application process. So if they've recently filed within the last 5 years or so and have said yes to allowing us to get their wage information, we have an authorization on file for them. However, for those that have been maybe on longer or declined it for whatever reason, we do take every opportunity when we're speaking with our beneficiaries to request the PIE authorization when we show there's no active one on file. The beneficiary can sign and attest the form over the phone. So if we do have like a phone interview, we can take the form over the phone. So what are some of the advantages of the PIE authorization? Well, it provides the beneficiary protection from certain penalties for errors or not reporting wage information timely. We also will find good cause if the participant fails to report or reports a late change in an employer. So let's say the beneficiary has an active authorization. Next slide. A beneficiary with an active authorization must continue to report wage and employment information until we or SSA sends a notice informing them they can stop reporting for that employer. A beneficiary with an active authorization can also revoke the authorization at any time, but they will need to understand that with the revoking process, they will have to then report wages, and they could be subject to any penalties for late reporting or omissions in information. Once the beneficiary has received a PIE notice, they will need to continue to report other requirements. For example, changes in living arrangements, changes in resources or other income, change in employers, or if they return to work. And the reason why I bring this one up about returning to work is that for our SSDI beneficiaries, if they are not working, let's say on sick leave, but they're still receiving their full salary, the PIH wage data will only tell us that they're receiving their full salary, but won't necessarily tell us that the person's returned to work. So they still need to report that information to us. And also, if the beneficiary also notices any inaccurate information on the notice, and I give the example of, let's say, we say, oh, we're getting wage information from your employer, ABC company, and the beneficiary says, I never worked for that company, they need to report to that to us immediately. We will likely, in that situation, probably refer them to Equifax to resolve the issue because Equifax will need to do an investigation. And during that time, we do pause the earnings being, or the SSN and the earnings being going back and forth until we can resolve the issue because we don't certainly want to be changing benefit amounts without their, you know, that are incorrect. Okay, so let's take a look at a PIE notice. Next slide. So this would be a PIE notice the beneficiary would receive telling them they can stop reporting wage and employment information for the employers listed in the notice. I wanted to provide this example to point out that if the beneficiary starts with a new employer, we do need to know that information. Until the beneficiary receives a notice to stop reporting, they need to report their wages. This is especially true for SSI beneficiaries. The reasoning behind this is that we need to confirm with Equifax whether they have the wage data for the new employer. The notice will also explain what responsibilities are still required, which I went over earlier about income and resources and returning to work. Now, when we stop receiving wage information from Equifax, let's go to the next slide. The beneficiary would receive a notice saying resume reporting notice. And this notice outlines that the employer is no longer receiving wage or employment information. If the beneficiary is still working for these employers, they need to report their wages to us. There are a few reasons why the wage data has stopped. For example, an employer may no longer be working with Equifax anymore, or the beneficiary stopped working for the employer, or the beneficiary has revoked their authorization. So this is when they would receive that resume reporting notice. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. This is PIE automation. And so what happens when we receive the wage information? If they're receiving Social Security disability and benefits, the earnings data is evaluated by our WorkSmart program to determine if a work CDR is needed. If we believe the beneficiary is working over SGA, we will alert the field office that a work CDR is needed. If the beneficiary is receiving, oops, hold on, cough here. Sorry about that. If the beneficiary is receiving SSI, the wage data is sent directly to the SSI record, and the SSI payment is adjusted automatically. This is especially true when the EIN it has been established on the SSI record, so that's why it's important for the beneficiary to report their new employer so that we can set up the new employer on the record. If the benefit adjustments are not successful, then an alert is generated to the field office technician to correct the record. Okay, let's go on to the next slide on how you can help us. So encourage beneficiaries to provide authorizations. If you get any questions about whether they should sign the authorization, please encourage them to take advantage of it. You may be asked by clients to explain the notices, and we just need your assistance to reinforce that they still need to report changes in living arrangements or changes in income and resources, or when their medical condition might improve, or that change in employer, or that they return to work. If the beneficiary is questioning any information on the notice about the employers, like the name of the employer or that they didn't work for them, Please tell them to report to SSA immediately. They will likely have to reach out to Equifax to correct the issue, but the notice will provide contact information for Equifax. Lastly, please remind beneficiaries to report work incentives. The wage and employment information we receive doesn't provide any evidence of impairment-related work expenses, subsidies, sick or vacation pay. And for SSI, we still need information for student earning income exclusions and the blind work expense or any impairment-related work expenses. So please continue to report those. So now I can take some questions if anyone has any.
All right. So here is how you ask any questions. Again, if you are over the phone, you'll raise your hand by dialing *5 and you'll be unmuted by the facilitator. Then you'll press *6 to unmute yourself. If in the MS Teams, you want to raise your hand by selecting the raise hand icon. Your mic will be unmuted by the facilitator, and then you must click the microphone yourself to unmute. Please do state your name, the name of your VR agency, and ask your question. So, Imani, do we have any raised hands at this time?
Hi, Keitra. Yes, we do have one raised hand from Christine. You can go ahead and unmute yourself and then ask your question.
Hi, my name is Kristen Venator. I'm from New Hampshire VR. Thank you. I just have a question about the notification. I know that you said that like all new Social Security applicants are getting an authorization, you know, to sign off on this. Can you clarify if all current Social Security beneficiaries have gotten a Social Security notice asking them, you know, if they want to opt into this?
So what's happening right now is like any opportunity we cross paths with the beneficiary, if they call to ask us a question about returning to work or anything to do with their SSI benefit, the technicians are being trained to look for an active authorization. And if there's not one on file, they will send the form or complete the form over the phone if we have them. And I do believe we did several Federal Register notices early on. We've been collecting authorizations for the last, I think it's 7 years, I think, is when we implemented it. So we've been trying to publicize it as much as we can. But, you know, for most folks who may never return to work, you know, an active authorization isn't as critical. But certainly if somebody's reaching out to us with, you know, work-related questions, or we're doing a redetermination on an SSI beneficiary or doing a work CDR for an SSDI beneficiary, we're going to be looking for that active authorization. And if we don't have one, we'll send the form to the beneficiary.
Thank you for that. If I could just clarify a follow-up in that. So if somebody's using the portal and reporting their wages every month, but there's nothing else that, like a communication with Social Security, have those individuals gotten this notification or no?
So when they evaluate the wages, they'll get a notification as to whether we have an authorization on file.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from
Cassie.
Yep, Cassie, if you can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hey, everyone. So when a customer, a claimant calls and reports their start of work and they have a MySSA.gov account, it can take several months before they can report online because the information has to be synced, I guess. How quickly does this come into play, the PI report? Like, if they start working today, is it going to show up next month? Or is it going to be, September, October? What kind of guidance can we give our customers?
So I would say it can be as early as the next month, but to be sure, probably give it 2 months. Because we do have to set the record up to receive the wage data. However, the technicians are being trained, and there has been a big push, leading up to our April implementation date to do as much of that EIN work on the SSI records, and I think they did a great job of setting up a lot. So I would say 30 days, but, you know, we do get the wage information right about this time, around July 7th, 8th. So if they were to mail it in today, it may take 60 days just because of the, you know, we just received the wage information. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Eugenia.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Hi. My question is will, if the form isn't signed by the beneficiary, would you ever ask BR to have them sign it and submit it? And would that give the state BRs the ability to also use the work number for the individual?
No, the PI authorization, I'll answer your second question first. The PI authorization is only the authorization between us, SSA, and the beneficiary, and technically within Equifax. So you would not be able to use it for obtaining access to the work number. And for your first question, the authorization form, you can help us. If you know for sure the beneficiary doesn't have an active authorization, you can certainly help us to obtain the form. I would just not do it like in bulk, because if we start receiving tons of requests and we find that a lot of them already have active authorization, that's just going to create a workload in our field offices that we don't have time to address. But certainly if you've kind of talked
Did you go away?
Hi, Christine. I think we lost your audio.
I got the gist of the answer, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Yeah, Christine, if you've had another question, you can go ahead and raise your hand again, and we'll definitely come back to you. Next, we have Donna. Donna, you have been unmuted. Go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi. I was just wondering if any kind of announcements have gone out or will go out that could be shared on social media.
Do we have Christine back yet, Kevin?
Hi, Keitra, no. Christine has dropped.
Okay. All right. For now, since she has dropped, we're going to wait for her to come back, but we're going to move forward in the presentation, and then we'll have a final Q&A session where you can ask any additional questions regarding that. All right. So next, I will share some information about the top three payment denials for the second quarter of 2025. So first, here are our top three denials. The 220, 8 months or less of SGA. We had a total of 282 in the second quarter. 320, 9 months of SGA, but not within a 12-month period. 253 total. And then for 620, untimely filing, we had 516. So that's the top of the three. So in the next few slides, we'll go through each of these. So next slide, please. So here is our code 220. Again, this denial reason is 8 months or less of SGA. The description is that 8 months or less of verified SGA level earnings were found in SSA's records. So 8 months or less. A tip to avoid this type of denial is if the initial claim was denied due to insufficient earnings, please wait an additional 6 months to submit a reconsideration claim to avoid another 220 denial. Next slide, please. Here we have the 320 denial. And for the reason, that's 9 months of SGA, but not within a 12-month period. And a further description is that 9 months of SGA were found in SSA's records, but the 9 months was not within a continuous 12-month period. Next slide, please. So here we have our tips to avoid this type of denial. You want to check the quarterly wage information due to determine if there are 3 out of 4 quarters of SGA level earnings identified. If not, the SVRA must provide verifiable documentation of 3 out of 4 quarters of SGA level earnings. Next, if an additional claim was denied due to insufficient earnings, please wait an additional 2 quarters to submit a reconsideration claim to avoid another denial. Next slide, please. So here we have our 620 denial, and this is untimely filing on an initial claim. The initial claim was filed more than 1 year from the last month of the SGA. So a tip to avoid this is review the earnings provided on the vocational rehabilitation client's earnings report, the Verser, to ensure you file that claim no more than 1 year from the last month of the SGA. So next, we have untimely filing for earnings reconsideration. This description is that the reconsideration claim for an earnings denial was filed more than 1 year from the decision date. A tip to avoid this type of denial is review the notice of determination from the initial claim to ensure you file the reconsideration no more than 1 year from the decision date. Next slide. So here we have the untimely filing for no earnings reconsideration. So the non-earnings reconsideration claim was filed more than 60 days from the decision date. To avoid this type of denial, you want to review the notice of determination from the initial claim to ensure you file the reconsideration no more than 60 days from the decision date. So next slide, please. Now we will go into our final Q&A session, and we do have Kristen back. So we will go to her, to ask any additional questions in reference to PIE. So if you're over the phone, you want to raise your hand by dialing *5 and you'll be unmuted by the facilitator. Then you'll press *6 to unmute yourself. If in MS Teams, you want to raise your hand by selecting the raise hand icon. You'll be unmuted by the facilitator, and then you'll unmute yourself by clicking your mic. So I believe our first question is from, going back to see where that is at.
I'll just jump in. We have one from Donna.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't see it. Okay. Thank you so much. Donna, please go ahead and ask your question or continue with your question.
Okay. Yeah. My question was, I wondered for the PIE implementation, is there any announcements that are going out that could be shared on social media, or has something already gone out?
Something has already gone out. I'll try to see if I can find it, but I think it went out in early April, right before we did full implementation.
Okay. Thanks.
Next question we have is from Maria. You can unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi, I'm Maria from Ohio VR. In the payment denial code 320, you said that the SVR, we could provide verifiable documentation. What would you consider verifiable documentation if your UI wages disagree with the Verser file?
Hello, Maria. This is Keitra. I will actually defer that question to SSA in reference to the 320 denial. What would be considered verifiable information? You said one. What information doesn't match, Maria?
So in the one slide, it said that the VR agency must provide verifiable documentation of 3 out of the 4 quarters at SGA level earnings. Yeah. One of the things that we're finding is that our UI wages disagree with what comes through on the Verser file. So if we can provide documentation that the person did meet SGA, even though the Verser file seems to be incomplete, what would be considered verifiable documentation?
Hi, this is Candace Whaley from SSA. I'll go ahead and answer this, Keitra, if you'd like.
Yep.
Our verifiable information is currently, yes, your UI wage data, any earnings from the work report, any pay stubs, anything like that. If FERSA is different than what we have, go ahead and submit that with your claim. Remember, we can take any kind of quarterly earnings as long as it meets the criteria that we sent out in the blast. So if all of the earnings that are on SSA's records and the VERSA file shows that one of the quarters is not SSA, okay? So say, for instance, when you're submitting the claim, we're looking at the VERSA file. You must have at least 9 months of SGA on VERSA for us to even look at the claim. So it's very important for you to submit the documentation. I mentioned this on another call, so that we can still review your claim because we have that documentation in front of us. So we're looking for the earnings on the remarks tab. We're looking for VERSA. We're looking at our earnings to see if there's at least 9 out of 12 months or any kind of documentation that the VR submits. So the documentation should have the employer, the SSN, the quarterly earnings, and the month and the quarter of those earnings, and the employer as well, for us to receive that as considered variable documentation. SSA will audit these claims at a later date to make sure that that documentation, those quarterly earnings, did show up on SSA's records. So we have an audit like after 6 months after we actually pay your claim if those earnings are not showing on VERSA. So please just submit any kind of quarterly wage data, pay stubs, work number, any documentation that has everything that I just identified. And if you have any further questions, please contact the VR help desk.
So I'm sorry, you said employer SSN number and their quarterly earnings?
Yes, the employer, the SSN, the quarterly earnings, and the quarters, the month and quarters of the earnings. All of that has to be on your documentation. We cannot accept just a spreadsheet from the actual VR. We have to have that UI wage data and those quarterly earnings as a faxed document.
This is, Candace, this is Katie. I just want to make sure we got it really clear. So if you are aware of quarterly wages, right, you have the wage data right in front of you that has the identifiers Candace just said, and I'm going to have her repeat them so we all have it, you know, and it disagrees with VERSA, go ahead and send what you have. You don't need to wait for it to appear on VERSA if you have it in your hand. If your wages disagree with VERSA, right, and you have in your hand valid quarterly wages, as long as it matches the criteria that Candace just said, send that over and fax it. Do not wait for it to appear in VERSA. Candace, can you repeat it just one more time, what needs to be on the UI wages proof for us?
Yes, we need the Social Security number, the name of the employer, the quarterly earnings, and the month and quarters of the earnings. Some UI wage data will just show the Social Security number, not the name. That is acceptable.
What do you mean month and quarters of earnings?
So if you have the second quarter of 2024 for the earnings for $7,000 for that quarter, third quarter 2024, $8,000 for that quarter, and the fourth quarter 2024, $10,000 for that quarter. We have to have the quarters, the month and the quarter, and the applicable earnings as well.
I'm still not understanding what you mean by month, though, because I don't hear a month in there. I only hear like second quarter of 2024, third quarter of 2024.
Actually, I'm trying to say the quarter and the year. I apologize for quarterly earnings. It's the quarter and the year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria.
Okay. I would ask at this time that we first have questions about PIE, and then we can move to additional questions about either the denials or the pre-ETS. So, Alicia, I see that you're next. If you can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question. If it is about the denials, if you could hold that question. But if it's about PIE, please go ahead.
Speak up to us a little bit.
Can you hear me?
Hi, yes. Alicia. I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. He said, you know what? My question was regarding about the codes, but if you want me to wait, I can definitely wait.
Okay. Your question is a reference to the denials?
It's actually a reference to, like, the codes that you guys mentioned at the right at the beginning. I think it was, like, a code 37, code 97, and some of those nature.
Alicia, it's kind of difficult to hear you. Is there some way you come through clearer?
You know what? Let me go ahead and try another way. So I'll ask in a minute.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our next question is from Cassie. Cassie, please go ahead. You can unmute yourself now. Go ahead.
I'm just not very speedy. I'm sorry.
No worries.
So I want to know, will we have access to this information for cost reimbursement? Is it going to be added like Verser? I guess that's my big question.
So Christine, that question was for you. Sorry.
Oh, well, I don't even know what Verser is, so I can't answer the question, but if you're talking about PI wages, maybe, I don't think you will have access to it, but can someone from the VR team help here?
Hi, Christine. The Verser file is just our batch match with the Office of Child Support and Enforcement. So it's the quarterly wages from the Office of Child Support.
All right. So we've contracted with Equifax. So, you know, they want to get their money. So they won't let us share the wage data with anyone else other than who's paying for it. So you may see some of the wage information in some reports that may get sent out where it'll, you know, reflect the monthly wage. That might be PI. It might be IRS earnings, you know. It won't ever be real clear that it was coming from PI, unfortunately.
Well, are there any plans to use PI to maybe help build up Verser? That's not more of your question. That's more of an SSA question. VR question.
Currently, Hi. I haven't heard anything about that. Is that Renee?
Hi, yes, it is. Yes, we have not made that determination yet. If we decide to use PI, we will let you know.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else have a question about PI for Christine?
We have Anita. Anita, you can unmute.
Actually, that was my question. I was wondering whether or not the PI information was going to be shared with us. So that's already been answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Anita. Sorry. Our next question, Catherine, is from Maria, or am I out of order?
Maria.
Yeah. Maria, please go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question. Hi, Maria. You can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
I think I already went. So I didn't know if I didn't lower my hand or something, but I already went. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Angela is next.
Angela, please go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
Okay. So for PI data, will it only be big businesses that are working with it, or will your small mom and pop somehow be connected with Equifax too?
So they have quite a few employers. There is some mom and pop places, and there are some of your bigger ticket folks. So we're seeing kind of everything across the board, except for self-employment.
Okay. Thank you, Angela. Thank you, Christine, for answering that question. So our next question is from Alicia. You're back again. If you want to go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question. Alicia, you're unmuted on this end. If you want to unmute yourself and ask your question.
I guess, can you hear me this time?
Hi, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Perfect. You know what? My question was in regards to the original codes that you guys mentioned at the beginning. It started with like a code 3797. And I'm not sure about like the other ones. It goes a 109 code.
Okay, this is in reference to the pre-ETS. Actually, at this time, we're taking questions in reference to the PI topic. So can you hold just a bit and we'll come right back to you?
Of course.
Thank you. All right. Our next question is from. Sorry.
That's all the questions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's go back to Alicia with her question for pre-ETS.
All right, Alicia, you have access to your mic. You can unmute.
Okay, so for like the codes 3797, and I think it was 109, 115, and 121, I think it's the other one. Are those the only codes that you guys are only going to be accepting for like every claim moving forward?
Good afternoon. So those are the codes we've been approved for. They are the codes that were recognized by RSA, by WinTAC, having to do with those services. So at this time, we're not taking any other youth or youth transition services other than the five that fall under those codes.
Okay, and can you just confirm which ones they were, if I got them correct, 3797?
37 or 103. So if you're using your RSA information, you can use 103. 37 is the SSA code, especially if you're putting it manually. Therefore, you can put that in manually. But as far as we know, those were the codes that we were approved to reimburse for having to do with pre-ETS.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Next question
from Shelly.
Yep. Thank you, Imani.
Hi, everyone. Sorry if this has already been answered. I came in a little bit late, right when you were doing the PRIETS codes. And for PRIETS, are you also going to be covering ACP costs? Will that be included on an initial claim? I know supplemental it wasn't, but for initial claims, is ACP also covered for PRIETS?
So that's part of your cost reimbursement. So, yes, it is being part of the cost reimbursement because they're not submitting an initial claim with just pre-ETS cost. You're submitting your actual regular initial claim. It just has pre-ETS involvement. So, therefore, we're following the process under cost reimbursement, and the system will calculate your ACP.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. So thank you. I believe we have one more question. It just came in from Kim. Kim Farley, if you can go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question.
Okay, am I unmuted?
Yes.
Okay. I kept clicking it and I... my question, I just want to make sure I understand this, is on the denial codes. You had mentioned that if it's not on the Bursar list, that you don't even look at the claim. So we upload our claim file, and we were told before to put like the quarterly amounts there. On there, if we're not using the Bursar report, so we put the quarterly amounts. Do you not even look at that if it's not on the Bursar report?
Hi, this is Candace again. Yes, we do look at any of the quarters and years that you put and the Apple earnings on the SVR remarks tab. That's why we do tell you to go ahead and do that. As long as you have 9 months, then we can go ahead and review your claim.
Okay, I'm misunderstood because I thought, oh shoot, well, we're putting this and it's not even getting looked at. So I didn't know if I needed to fax something, you know, with a barcode along with that, or can I ask another question while I'm on here? Our IDES is uploaded to our software program, so when we print out our report from there, all that information comes from IDES. Is that good enough to send in when we, you know, if we have to send backup on that?
I would say I'd have to look at it before, you know, I make a decision, or not me, but SSA make a decision, because we can't, like, we've had some people submit spreadsheets with that information, and that's like not acceptable because it's from in-house. Is that from in-house?
Actually, I'd have to pull one up to see. I haven't had one for a while that I've done that way. I'd have to pull one up to see if it's an actual report from Illinois Employment Security on that. So I don't know if it's something that was just included, you know, when they upload the information from IDES into the system, if it's redone okay. To fit our program. So I'll have to look at that to see, but
let's table this. And can you send it to the VR help desk and we can review it from there, and then SSA can make a decision on that?
Okay. Yeah, I can do that. So, okay. I'll send one over to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think that's it.
Hi, this is Shauna Dixon from Social Security. And I just wanted to add to as well, as far as when we do not look at a claim, for anyone else who may have a little bit of confusion on that. The only times we do not look at your claim, and we call that a 590 denial, is when you submit the word Bursar in the remarks tab. We check our quarterly earnings, and we do not see 3 out of 4 quarters of earnings. Then you will receive a 590 denial. Also, for the other VR who said they submit quarterly wages, we'll look at those wages. If we do not see 3 out of 4 quarters, then you will receive that 590 denial. Or if you stated that you were going to fax documentation in and we have not received that documentation within 24 hours of you submitting the claim, then we will deny that claim a 590. If we don't receive any evidence, quarterly earnings, primary evidence, or anything of that nature. So I just wanted to make that clear as well. Okay, thank you.
From Eugenia, you can unmute yourself and ask your question.
Yeah, this one's for Candace. You had given the list of what was required for the UI wages. If you're submitting that, I'm assuming under other. We're still waiting for a decision on the source of the data. The Texas Workforce Commission also houses the UI unit for unemployment insurance. And so is the source, as far as where we're concerned, we need to know what the source needs to be for us to submit that.
Yes, I spoke to your finance department, and he said you were working on something, and you would get back to me when it's finalized, because I gave him all the information that he needs.
Okay.
So, and that was like 2 weeks ago. So I'm just waiting for him to get back to me with the document so that Renee can approve it or not.
Oh, okay.
All okay. Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Our next question is from Anita. You can unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi, my question is a PRIETS question. If we submit claims for a PRIETS case that was that goes back as far as the May 1st, 2023 date, is that automatically considered a supplemental claim, or can that also be considered an initial claim?
So if we paid a claim, Anita, in May 2022, therefore, mm-hmm. it would be a supplemental claim. An initial claim is a claim that you're processing right now where you never got any pre-ETS benefits. If you're saying that you want to submit an initial claim for May 2023, though, with pre-ETS involvement, then they would have to follow the guidelines of everything else involved with pre-ETS having to do with their age. So they should have been 16 or 17 at the time. It should have led to a VR claim in 2024 or 2025. And mm-hmm. then we would look at the initial claim. The reasoning why we say the May 1st is for supplemental claims, because we're not looking at any paid claims that were paid before May 1st, 2023. Does that help?
Got it. That helps a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Anita, for that question. And thank you, Candace. At this time, we actually are going to move forward. Any additional questions that you may have can go to the vr.helpdesk at ssa.gov. So any additional questions you have in reference to pre-ETS, PI, or the top denial reasons, again, please send those to vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. My apologies for that. So if we can go to the next slide, and then I'll come back to that email address because it will be on screen. So an upcoming event for this month on July 30th, we have our WISE event, the Work Incentive Seminar event. The topic this month is Ticket to Work and Reasonable Accommodations. So again, that's on June 30th. The registration is open now on the Choose Work website. Next slide, please. Here are the resources. If you have any questions, as I mentioned, if you have any questions about any of the topics shared today that you were not able to ask, please send those to vr.helpdesk@ssa.gov. You also can contact the help desk by phone Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we have the toll-free number. Option one is the beneficiary help desk. Option two is the EM payments help desk. Option three is the EN systems help desk. And then option four for state vocational rehabilitation agencies. For email, you can email any questions regarding cost reimbursement, ticket assignments, the service provider website, or the portal, or any topics, again, shared today. I want to thank everyone so much for their participation in today's call. I want to thank Christine for the information that she shared in reference to PI, and Shada for the information you shared in reference to pre-ETS. That concludes today's call. Have a great rest of your day.